Monster Man, episode 330, Decapus to Dragonfly. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we're continuing our journey through the monsters section of Creature Catalog, the 1986 supplement for Basic Dungeons & Dragons. Before we start, a quick note, if you have pledged to the Monster Man Patreon in the last week or so, and you haven't had your on-air notification yet, that is because I am recording these episodes a little further in advance than I normally do, just because of a busy schedule. So, don't worry, I will get caught up as soon as I can. Alright, in contrast to the normal episode format, which has two monsters, I'm going to talk about three monsters today, or in actuality, I'm going to talk about two and just quickly gloss over one, because it's a monster we've already done and I have no new thoughts about it. But let's start with a monster I do have some thoughts about, that is the Decapus. Now, a Decapus is like an octopus, only instead of 8 legs, it has 10 legs. And instead of living in the sea, it lives in the trees. And instead of a kind of enigmatic octopus face, it has a big scary mouth full of teeth. And instead of enigmatic octopus eyes, it has big googly eyes. And also it's hairy. It's actually not very similar to an octopus now that I think about it. I guess when I say similar to an octopus, what I mean is that it has a kind of rounder central body, and then it has some tentacles, although, as I mentioned, 10 of them rather than 8. The Decapus looks, and I hate to say this because it sounds like a criticism, and it's absolutely not a criticism, the Decapus looks absurd. It looks like a monster in a cartoon. It's a very strange contrast to the typically kind of quasi-realistic style that we've seen in the illustrations. It do sometimes verge on the cartoony, but this is an extreme case. The Decapus has a super hideous face, which is described as, quote, very terrible to behold, close quotes, and it, like, brachiates along, swinging from whatever by its tentacles. So if it's in a wood, you know, it swings from tree branch to tree branch. If it's in an indoor environment, it clings to the ceiling, and so it will hang on to whatever it is with one tentacle and fight with the other 9. There's also a marine Decapus, which doesn't have to cling on to anything and therefore fights with all 10 tentacles, plus which it is blue. If it spit rocks, this thing could be a Legend of Zelda monster. I actually kind of like the Decapus, but they are full on goofy. The illustration has a certain, like, raggedy energy about it with its big goofy mouth full of triangle teeth. I know everything I say sounds critical, but I don't intend it to be taken that way, because actually I think there's a lot to like about the Decapus. I think you could go full gonzo with this creature, right? This is a very gonzo monster, and I actually think that there are enough kind of gonzo monsters in Creature Catalog, and we're actually going to start to look at another one in a moment. Not completely gonzo, but it would fit in with a gonzo kind of game setting. I think you could populate a pretty gonzo D&D game just pretty much out of the Creature Catalog, plus whatever's in the box sets. Those are more kind of bread and butter monsters. You know, for the first time, it occurs to me that the Creature Catalog in some ways, and if it is not the first time, and I've actually said this before, I apologize, but it occurs to me that the Creature Catalog in some ways is comparable to the Fiend Folio. Because they're both compilation books, and they're both responses to a book where the core monster books, in this case the box sets, already exist. So, I think I doesn't exist when this comes out, but, you know, the basic ones do, but most of them do. So, by definition, you're going to tend to get the weirder ones, because all the normal ones have already been done. It's something that I have to bear in mind when I think that the book is getting a little strange. It's necessarily strange because it's actually like the strange section of a larger work. Next up, we have the Dragon, Sea. Now, you're never going to believe this, but it is a dragon, and it lives in the sea. I am certain we've talked about a sea dragon or a marine dragon or whatever previously. These are monsters that can sometimes be mechanically distinct from their, like, mainstream dragon counterparts, but that are very seldom conceptually distinct in an interesting way. And the sea dragon is no exception. It's a dragon and it lives in the sea, so it has slightly different rules, but otherwise it's pretty much the same. I do like the idea that it flies a bit like a flying fish, so it can fly for a little bit, launching itself above the waves. That's kind of a neat image for something so large. Other than that, I said that this was conceptually similar to a regular dragon, even if it was mechanically distinct, but also it's not all that mechanically distinct. I don't really have that much to say about the Dragon Comma C. Once again, it's worth reiterating, that's not necessarily a criticism. If you want a dragon and you want it to be in the sea, then here are the stats for that. Finally, we have the dragonfly. James, I hear you say, I know what a dragonfly is. Little buzzy guys. Aha, but that's where you'd be wrong. The dragonflies in basic Dungeons & Dragons are dragonflies. They are some kind of hybrid creature. I have no idea how that would work, but there's something draconic about them. And in fact, they come in 5 colors, just like your dragons. So they seem like they come from a world where the elemental correspondences of the dragon colors are a more like fundamental organizing principle. Who are the demons or devils that that's true of? The Abishai? Am I remembering that wrong? I don't know, but there's one for each of the 5 heads of Tiamat. They're fine. They have corresponding breath weapons, but like much smaller scaled down versions of that. I mean, they're giant dragonflies, but they're still just dragonflies, not regular dragons. I think these guys are actually quite cool and colorful. I know it seems like I shouldn't like them, but they start from the fact that there is something odd about dragonflies, right? Dragonflies are a funny looking kind of creature. They have, like, it's no coincidence that alien life forms and things are often kind of have a dragonfly-like appearance. And I think that's because there is something about the dragonfly's anatomy that just looks kind of weird to us, whether it's the disproportion of like the eyes and the body or the sort of funny way the wings are. I think that you could do a whole kind of, remember I said you could do a Gonzo setting? I feel like specifically you could do a kind of Sword and Planet sort of setting out of a lot of these monsters. I can definitely see this being something that John Carter would fight. Maybe not John Carter. Maybe they don't have enough class for John Carter. Maybe Dre Prescott. Shoutouts to the like one person listening who knows who Dre Prescott is. Doesn't count if you're German. If you're German, you're allowed to know who Dre Prescott is. That was a very deep Sword and Planet literature cut, and I only know it because there's a huge amount of Dre Prescott material for some reason in the war game Hordes of the Things. I've never read a Dre Prescott book. But yeah, this could be like an alien life form. I think you could get away with that, you know? I think it definitely could fit into some kind of steaming lost world jungle kind of an environment as well. If you had a dragon in there and they kind of had been, I don't know, feeding on, I don't even know what dragonflies eat, but if they had been feeding on things that were in like the stream that flowed out of the dragon's lair that had been picking up some of its dragon magic, you know, I think there's actually something there. Maybe whatever it is that makes all these creatures huge also endows them with draconic qualities. That's kind of fun. And it's sort of neat to have dragonflies out there breathing fire. It's also, it kind of reminds me a little bit of the literalization that we got in things like the World of Cinnabar, where like the nurse shark has first aid skills because it's a nurse, or the leopard shark can transform into a leopard because it's a leopard shark. So it's like someone looked at a dragonfly and went, well, I get that it's called a dragonfly, but it's weird that it doesn't breathe fire. Well, I'll just patch that up. There's a certain charm to that. All right, in our next episode, we're also going to be returning to a creature that we saw way back in one of our earlier AD&D seasons, so I don't know that I have that much to say about it, but maybe it's worth revisiting. It's been a long time since we've talked about the Dragon. And we're also going to discuss the Dusanu and, if we have time, the Fungoid. So please join me then for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.